Kate Callahan, we're live.
How are you, Jordan?
Wow, super formal. Yes, how are you?
Yes.
Your setup looks pretty sick. You got a purple light back there. I don't do like the video, so people aren't gonna be able to see this, but you've got a nice podcast setup.
Yeah, I put some work into this little studio since I'm in here all the time.
I like it. So before we dive into the meat and potatoes, how about you just tell everyone who you are, where you're from, what do you do, and also let's start where they can follow you, just right off the bat.
Okay, well, hi, my name is Kate and Michelle, and I am an online health and fitness coach for women over 30. And I'm really focused on long-term sustainable health outcomes for women. So not just the before and after, but after the after photo, because that's what really matters. I live in Dallas, Texas, so this is fun. And you guys can find me at Kate and Michelle on pretty much every platform.
I feel like most people who just see you on social media, they think that they just call you Kate and Michelle. That's like what they think your actual name, like that's like they'll refer to you as that, not Kate Callahan. Is there a reason why you put Kate and Michelle on there and not Kate Callahan? Or like what's the reason behind that?
So I feel weird using my like real government last name on the internet because the internet's weird with weird people on there. So I've always
Okay,
gone by
that's
Kate and
fair.
Michelle.
Got it. Okay. All right. Nice. So when you and I first met virtually, you were very much in the bodybuilding world, like that physique world, and things have very much changed. But even before that, you were a super high-level athlete. So can you just talk about from the very beginning? From when you were wee little Kate and we were like
Wee
very
little one.
small little Kate. And like, just let's talk about like your childhood, your upbringing, and then how you got into fitness, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, so I grew up in a very small town in Vermont. I think there were 52 kids in my graduating class in high school. So
Whoa.
I played sports from a very young age. I grew up in a single parent household. So my mom worked three jobs and I had an older brother and sister. And after school, it was like you go across the tracks, literally, railroad tracks on the other side of that. Bad shit happened. And my mom's like, don't go down there. So my
It's
brother used
like
to take
Bambi, never
me.
stray into the meadow.
That's right. And so my brother used to take me to the rec center. So I learned to play football, baseball, and basketball pretty much from early on. And basketball was like just my outlet. I had a lot of, I mean, I feel everybody has fucking trauma, but like it was a great outlet for me. And it allowed me to express a lot of the anger that I had as a child in a productive way. And so that was like the thing that sparked my passion for athletics. And as I got older, I was a part of all of the higher level teams, again, in Vermont. So whatever that means. And then I was a starting freshman in high school on every varsity team that we had, won back-to-back state championships in multiple sports. And then my junior year, I got scouted to play AAU in Lowell, Massachusetts. So I used to drive 2.5 hours just for practice every day.
Jeez, every day?
And then travel the
You it would
country.
every like 5 days a week, you'd go from Vermont to Lowell.
Massachusetts.
Who would your mom drive you? You drove yourself? Wow,
The
that's
initial
amazing.
couple, she brought me because she was like, I need to make sure it's safe because, like, mom.
Right. Yeah.
But
Of course.
after I
Smart.
got into it and she met the coach, and his name was Ricky Oliver, he was great. And yeah, I started going all the time. And then I traveled the country playing. I had a huge ego when I was younger. And I was like, I'm playing Division I, like, fuck anything else. So every D2 opportunity, like UMass Lowell wanted me to play there, they actually ended up going D1 during my time in collegiate
Oh, no
athletics.
way.
So I look back on that and I'm like, I should have just gone there, but my pride got in the way. So when it came down to it, my mom, I was offered to go D1, but they wanted me to go to prep school first. And of course, if you know anything about prep school, it's fucking expensive. So my mom tried her best. Like, she really did. She didn't tell me no. Like, she really tried to do what she could to make it an option. But unfortunately for me, it wasn't. So I had like a last minute decision. Of course, I pretty much could have gone to any D3 school I wanted to. So my game plan from that point was I'll go D3, see how I feel, and then I might love it. Like, you know, some people want to be a big fish in a small pond, and that's cool. So I went to USM, and I played with Fifield was his name, and he was super smart. So he ran the offense that like all of the big Pac-10 teams would run. He kind of created that, and Tennessee would run it or South Carolina ran it. So whenever we faced them, my path later on when I went to Division One. But after a year, I got picked up by an NBA skills trainer in Raleigh, North Carolina. And so they were like, hey, you should come down and train for the summer. I've seen your training videos. Like, you've got potential. I had no skill, but I was really athletic. So I went down there for the summer, trained. I got to play with all of the big time NBA players that you guys know, or collegiate athletes that are now in the NBA, like Devontae Graham and Isaac Copeland, for example. And so training with them was awesome, but I got my ass kicked. And one thing I loved about basketball is like, they don't give a fuck if you're female. Like, if you're on the court, they will rip you apart. And a lot of that built mental fortitude because they'll talk about your mom, your sister, your brother, your cousin. Like, they don't give shit. And so through that, like, I had to build my levels of mental fortitude through that exposure. And then after the summer, I had improved so much and I loved it. And so before I told my mom that I wasn't going to go back, I told my head coach first. I sent him an email and I was just like, I really appreciate everything, but I'm not going to be returning. And he
Oh,
was like,
wow.
the fuck you're not. And I was like, again, I really appreciate everything you've done. Like, I'm super grateful for all of that, but I do need to go a different direction with my future. So I took a year off from school and I just trained. So I worked at Dave & Buster's. I was working like 8 hours a week. I
Oh,
slept on a blow-up
geez.
mattress. Like, I was just like, I had no idea what I was doing.
Where
Like,
were you sleeping?
I had a bed. I had a one bedroom apartment in Raleigh, Durham, North Carolina.
Okay, got it.
And so I was like, sometimes I'd sleep in the employee break room because they had a mattress in there, and I was really good friends with my manager. And he was like, dude, you have a double shift and you're just gonna go train for like 2 hours. So if you need to crash here before your next
Oh,
shift,
that's
do that.
nice.
So I would. And so after that, I went to NC State, I went to Duke, I went to UNC, and I went to UNC Greensboro. And I talked to their team. I played pickup with them. And one thing I really appreciated was that all of the coaches at those institutions were like brutally honest with me. They
I
were
love
like,
that.
you would be a great second string. Like, you would be a great, practice player. But because they recruit so early, like, my goal was like, I'm not doing all this to be your fucking third string, your second string. Like, I'm starting. Like, I still had that. So I went to UNC Greensboro, and Wendy Palmer was the head coach at the time. And she was like, so you think you can hoop? And I was like, duh. And she was like, all right, come play pickup. And I was like, okay. So I went in, and of course, I was like the one white girl there and the last person picked. So I was like, that's fine. But I didn't say shit. And I dropped 22 points and I just walked out of the
Shut
gym.
up.
Yep. I was like, I had the best pickup game of my life. I was so excited about it. So I left, and then I got a call from Wendy Palmer, was like, can you come into my office? I was like, yep. So I went in, and she was like, look, kid, I promise you nothing. But if you want to walk on and you want to try out for this team, the opportunity is yours. And I was like, say no more. So I would go in, I would do private training, I would do strength and conditioning, then I would do practice, and then I would do extra one-to-ones. So I was
Jeez.
working out 4 times a day because I
Did you have
knew,
to
like,
pay for these one-on-ones?
no. As soon
Oh,
as
wow.
you're
Okay.
like going through that process of walking on, you have access to their personal training facilities, their
Oh,
athletic trainers, their
nice.
strength and conditioning coaches. Yeah, like, they throw you into the mix and basically they're like, can you keep up? And remember, like, everybody on the team had already gone through summer conditioning. So they were already supposed to be in shape for all this. So I wrote did all of that because I was like, I'm not the tallest. I'm not the most talented person. So I've got to rely on my work ethic. Like, I've got to be the smartest player that she's got.
Let's put your height into perspective. Like you and I are like the same height. So we're both
Yep.
super short. Yeah. Like you, I'm sure you were like probably the shortest one on the court, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay, cool.
Yep. So, I'll never forget the first conditioning session that we had because her philosophy was we got to get in shape before we touch a basketball. So, kind of like Coach Carter kind of thing. So, she would make us run sprints and you had to do it in a certain amount of time per your position. And if one person didn't make their time, everybody had to
Oof.
run again.
Jeez.
Yeah. So, people would be throwing up in practice every day. And so, I remember the first time that we were in sprints, again, a down and back for a point guard had to be under 12 seconds. So, 6 seconds down, 6 seconds and back max. I did that the first sprint we ran. I beat everybody from like the free throw line to the baseline, just like strides in front of everybody else. Wendy Palmer had a conniption. She was like, how the fuck is this white girl from Vermont gonna come in here and beat all your fucking asses? She was pissed. And then we went to line up and run again. She's like, no, you sit, you sit. They're gonna run. Like, she was,
Oh,
yeah, she
wow.
didn't fuck
So you didn't
around.
even have to do it.
No, but I would have. Like,
Right.
I
Yeah, of
just,
course.
yeah, I
Yeah,
was
yeah,
like,
yeah.
whatever I need to do to earn this. But she like wanted to make a point to them. Like, she was very much
Right.
that way. So within that, in the preseason, I took a starting position and I ended up starting on the
Wow.
team. Yep. So that was my dream come true. It came to fruition just like I had imagined it a million freaking times. And I was having the time of my life. And I was like, cool. I was going to play professionally. I was going to go overseas because you make more money as a female athlete overseas than you do in the States.
Interesting.
So the only contingency on that was if I had a career-ending injury.
Okay.
And unfortunately, I did. So
Oh no.
my last season there, in the middle of a game, I had a collision with a 6'4" post player. I mean, she
Oh,
ran me over.
geez.
Yep, she was one of those players who her role was to come out there and cause chaos. I mean, every player has a role. You just need to know what it is. So, of course, like I had a breakaway. She just fucking pummeled me, totally down. So I get up. My leg
Was
is
it a
on
legal hit or
fire.
no?
I mean,
Was
it
it
was a
legal
foul
or?
for sure.
Oh, got it. Okay.
Yeah, it was intentional. So I get up and I can't walk. I'm just like, nope. So athletic trainers come out. I get up. I walk off this floor. Come to find out, I had torn my patellar tendon.
Oof.
But, and this is where my heart breaks for athletes that go through stuff like this. We had a doctor, and I think every Division I team has to have a medical doctor on their team. And so in order for me to continue to play, because I was performing, that's all they cared about, was like, we need her to perform. So I would get shot up with cortisone shots all the time.
Jeez.
Before the game, during the game, post game, I
Really?
was in PT, yeah, every single day before and after practice. So I had to do PT on top of practices. And again, certain practice things they kept me out of because they need to keep me healthy. So right before playoffs, we were going to play South Carolina. And this is the year that they won. And I'm so mad that I didn't get to play in this game. But so we were going down to South Carolina. This is like my dream. I'm like, this is going to be the biggest stadium I've ever played in. Like, this is going to be packed because that year they were killing it. So we go down there. And the doctor takes a look at my knee and he's like, this thing is torn. Like, I will lose my license if I clear this athlete to play. So they had to brace me up. I had to be on crutches. So I'm crutching around Gamecock Stadium and I'm just like heartbroken. I'm like, this is
Oh,
awful.
that's devastating.
So after that, I had to go home and have surgery. So that was like the end of that. And that's where I hit rock bottom. And so through that, I was like, okay, well, my entire identity has been this my whole life. Because I was always praised for how much of an athlete I was, like how much I could perform, what a great leader I was, like my halftime speeches, just like being that person. And so when I lost that, I was like, who the fuck? What do I do now? I was really good at school, but I was just naturally a nerd. Like I was really good at sciences. I studied biochem and pharmaceuticals in my undergrad. So I was always good in school, but I wasn't known for my intellect, like not at all. And so I remember the day after surgery, I found out I was allergic to oxycodone. So imagine not being
Oh,
able to take your pain
geez.
meds on a reconstruction surgery.
Ugh.
And I'm sitting there crying, talking to my mom. And I was like, look, I don't know who the fuck I am, but I don't like this. I was like, so I need to figure that out. So I was like, my next mission. I'm very mission oriented. So I'm like, I'm going to figure out who I am. Like, that's an easy task. So I crutched down to the rec center where I grew up and started playing. And I just sat on the ground and cried, like with a basketball in my hand. Like, I didn't know what the fuck to do. The next day, I went back down there and I went to the weight room and I was like, all right, I guess I'll just start lifting weights, right? Because this knee is like atrophying. So you have like a stick leg and you have like a normal sized leg and you're like, oh, this is imbalanced. So I'm like, let me do research to figure out how I can come back. Because I was still focused kind of on basketball. I was like, maybe I can make a comeback. Maybe I can come back and play. But through that in the rehab process, I mean, it will humble you. I couldn't even do a knee extension, like, not even my own weight.
Just
Like,
body weight, yeah.
it was so brutal and it was heartbreaking. Like mentally, you go from being better than you ever imagined that you could be, and then that dream just dies. And so it's like,
Instantly. And
yeah,
unexpectedly, yeah.
like earth shattering for
Do you
me.
ever still talk to the girl that hit you? You ever like message her or anything?
No, I don't
No?
even remember her name.
Oh, wow. Okay.
No, nope, that was a trauma. We're just gonna call it trauma and put it in the back of our head. That moment really wasn't the hardest for me. I think the hardest moment for me in the aftermath was realizing none of my coaches ever cared about me. I think like Wendy Palmer, I have a lot of gratitude for her because she gave me an opportunity and that's all I ever needed. That's all I ever wanted somebody to give me was an opportunity. So I'm super grateful for her, but everybody else, they just moved on. You're replaceable at that level. And I think that was hard for me to accept.
You're just a
But
tool for
after that,
them.
yeah. And I think that's where a lot of young athletes, impressionable athletes, visionaries, like with ambition, that just see their lives playing out a certain way. And when they realize that your team doesn't actually care about you, right? Every athlete ends their career at some point. We're not all going to be Tom Brady's that like always have this legacy with them. Most of us will not be remembered whatsoever. And I think that that was hard for me to conceptualize. But moving on from that, once I started to recover, I of course decided I was going to get into bodybuilding because it was a 24-hour job. I could do just like I did in basketball because I was really good with structure. I was like, I've got great work ethic. I'm willing to suffer through most things. I mean, I played on a torn patellar tendon, so that tells you something. And I was like, and it takes up all my time. Like, this is perfect. So I got into that, and that's where I took it to an extreme. So I have a very extremist personality, and I have
You?
to be very no way, no way. So yeah, I got into that. My first coach, just for people's examples, and this is why I talk a lot of shit about fad dieting, but my first diet was like 150 grams of protein, 50 carbs, and like 10 grams of fat. And I didn't
Oh
know at the
my
time because they were giving meal
gosh.
plans. This is before Lane Norton really took off with the concept of kind of if it fits your macros. But so I was eating 8 almonds a day, tilapia and asparagus every meal. I was
Oh
doing
my
90 minutes of
gosh.
workouts, 2 hours of cardio, and just like withered away. So I went from 124 pounds, really healthy, athletic, all the way down to 93 pounds in a
Oh
process of
my
time.
gosh.
Yeah. And so that's where I had health issues. I'll never forget. I was walking with my dad. We were at ECU because my younger sister went there for their homecoming. We were going to go watch the football team. My dad is walking. My family's like in front of me. And I took that so personally because I thought they didn't want to walk with me. But I literally did not have the energy to walk as fast as my father, who
Oh,
was in his 50s at the
geez.
time. He was like 53 or 55. So I'm like, you guys don't fucking like me. You're just trying to walk in front of me. You don't even want to be seen with me. Like, I took it so personally. My mom's like, Kate, you just walk slower than
So
an
slow.
80-year-old fucking person with a hip replacement. Like, we've got to move. And that's when it dawned on me. Like, it took that experience for me to go, yeah, something is not right. So I knew at the
Did
time that
they say
things were
anything
off,
to
but I
you? Were they
still,
concerned about you? Like, did they say, like, hey, you are
yeah.
very small. Like, what's going on?
So my mom, this is where it's hard. Like, your parents, in retrospect, I know my mom was pretty much always right about everything. But when you're younger and you don't have the foresight to see consequences, you just think your parents are trying to impose upon your happiness. Like, they
Correct.
want to tell you what to do. So I'm like, Mom, you're ruining my life. Like, I'm healthy. I'm doing fine. This is what bodybuilding is. Like, you know, this is healthy, healthy, not like regular healthy that you, my mom's a medical doctor. So she like actually works with people on this shit. But I was like, fuck your education, right? And again, we see this on the internet all the time of like education is bullshit, which I think is a totally different conversation. But so eventually, I ended up in the hospital multiple times. So I used to get really, really, really bad rhabdo, and I would train and I would overtrain, and then I'd end up in the hospital, and then I'd recover, and then I'd go back to those same patterns and behaviors, and I'd end up back in the hospital. So eventually, I ended up in the hospital, and my mom took me that time. She's like, I'm coming with you. So we went, they drew my blood, they got blood work done. My resting heart rate at the time was 32 beats per minute.
Jeez.
So, yeah, so my mom is sitting there, and this is kind of like where I realized this was a problem. My mom is sitting there, and the doctor's looking at me. Again, I context, and we don't need to get into this portion of the story, but at the same time in which I lost my dream, let's say, I was also leaving a very abusive relationship. So I had a lot of shame and guilt around that. I also had a lot of heartbreak around my dream. And then I was trying to fill that with bodybuilding. So you can see that's a terrible coping mechanism. But I
Yeah, makes
had
sense.
the worst depression ever. I didn't give a fuck about my life. I'd go to bed hoping I didn't wake up, which is so sad for me to see now, but that's genuinely how I felt. So when I was sitting in front of that doctor, he was like, if you don't stop what you're doing, your heart is going to stop beating. Like, just dead ass. And I was like, I don't care. And
You
when I
said that?
said that, yeah, my mom was sitting there and I just saw
Oh,
her. My mom has
geez.
the most beautiful green eyes ever. And when she cries, they get like ultra bright green. And so her eyes just well up and I can see her eye shade changing. And that, for whatever reason, hit me. Like, if she wasn't there, I don't think I would have had the same experience. But seeing her break in that moment, like, she couldn't save me. It didn't matter what she did. Like, and this is what we see as coaches too. It's like, you want to help somebody, but if they don't want to help themselves, it's like, you can't do anything.
Correct.
So from that point, I looked at her and then I looked at him and I was like, okay, what do I need to do? Because I don't give a fuck if I'm not here, but I can't see her like that. And so my mom was my best friend through that period of my time. She kept me accountable. She helped me work through stuff. She was super supportive. But again, she didn't impose her will upon me. She was like, I just looked at her and I said, I need you to keep me accountable to doing these things. Because if I have somebody holding me accountable to do shit, I'll do it, especially if it's somebody I love. And so that's when I started to go through the healing process and do my own research. I fired that coach, obviously, but I was like, okay, how do
Thank
I
God.
fix this so I'm not like this forever? Because I was still terrified. I was stuck in that cycle of, well, if I stop working out, if I stop doing all this cardio, if I stop eating this way, am I going to get fat? Right. I had such severe body dysmorphia at the time where I was like, if I get to a healthy weight, I'm fat. Like, my perception was just totally skewed. So I started going through that process and doing my own research. And that's when I came along another coach. And he was talking about at the time, like all the science behind these things in the bodybuilding world and, all that mess. And I got really into his content. That's how I found him. And then I reached out to him and he started working with me to help me through this stuff. And throughout that, he was like, you are so smart. Like, you should apply to this program at USF. And so that's when I got connected with Dr. Bill Campbell, who runs the Performance and Physique Enhancement Lab at USF. And at
Got
the
it.
time, I think everybody's passions stem from their own obsession on how to fix themselves. Like, that's kind of the conclusion I've come to. So,
That's fair. Yeah.
like, my goal was to figure this out so that I could heal my own issues with my health. So I went there, I met with him once, he accepted me on the spot into his program. And then I started getting into his research lab, doing my education there. And I was coaching for this other individual who had a coaching company and was like, I really want a strong female who knows their shit because I don't have another coach that I can send people to, and I want somebody that can help me with that. So I was like, yes, I'd love to. Context for that, I was coaching people kind of on the side before that, but just because I wanted to help them. A lot of younger athletes where I was from wanted a coach and they wanted to learn how I got to where I was athletically. So I started working with them and then their mothers wanted help because that's kind of sometimes how it happens. Women love that.
Yeah,
So I
happens
was
all the
coaching
time.
them. Yeah. And then when I moved, they're like, wait, you're moving. Like, how are we going to do this? And I was like, well, I'll just do it online and you can pay me like $50 a month. Like, I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. I was like, that's fine. Yeah, sure. So then I started working with them. I went through my master's. I graduated that. I competed in bodybuilding then. I still continued to do it, right? But I was healthier. That was the story I told myself. Like, but I'm healthier now because I'm heavier now. Like, it's fine. I could still be super extreme, but I'm healthy bodybuilding-ish. And then it wasn't until I graduated, I got my master's. I had a full coaching roster at the time. And I realized like there was a lot of shit happening with the clients that I was serving that we didn't address. So for me, mental health is really huge. Obviously, I've talked a little about depression. I had huge anxiety there too. And so I could see people getting disordered eating patterns from as a consequence to the restrictive and rigidative nature of bodybuilding. And so I was like, we need to be talking about this. Like, I don't feel morally or ethically that this is aligned with what we're doing. Like, this is leaving people in really shitty situations. And they didn't want to do that. They're like, you're a great coach. You prep people really well. Don't talk about that other shit. Fine. So at the time, I was really, really anxious. I was like, this, I can't keep doing this. Like, yeah. And so I had my breaking point. And that's prior to that is when you and I had connected. And you were just like, I've said this before on my podcast, but like you were that voice of reason that was like, you can do this on your own. You can do this on your own. I don't know the fuck you don't do this on your own. And so for me, it was finally like, I got fed up. I was just so anxious all the time. I loved what I was doing. I didn't like the culture in which I was doing it. There's nothing wrong with what their culture was. It just didn't fit me in my vision. So I never wanted to like taint that. They have their own business model with their own vision. I just didn't fit with that anymore. I had grown a different direction. And so that's when I was like, okay. So I left that. I moved. I ended up in Dallas. I healed. I got my period back and I launched my business. And that's kind of how this whole thing came to fruition.
Well, that was a quick story, huh? No, I love that. It gives a lot more context into how incredible you are, why you're so passionate about what you do, why you're so informed and intelligent. Tell me about your business now. Like, what's your business? What do you do? Like, give me some insight on that.
I am really focused on bridging the gap between psychology and physiology. I do think that those two things are not independent of one another. And so I'm getting my second master's in clinical psychology. I'll get my license next year. So I'm super excited about that. But I really focus on habits, habit formation, behavioral analysis, and then pattern disruption. That's like the how, if you want to talk about it in like 10,000 foot level views. But I require flexibility in my program. So if you are rigid or you're not willing to learn to eat out or learn to do those things that require flexibility of you, then you're probably not a good fit. It people that are perfectionistic, I think a lot of people see the world in black and white, which is why I love the psychological elements of what we do, is we help them shift that paradigm through a lot of our approaches and through our coaching process. And that's really what I'm focused on long term. And yes, I do have my certification in functional medicine. I did that whole thing. Like, I understand those concepts. So it's a lot of nerdiness with a lot of really easy implementable actions that are sustainable. Because one of our biggest philosophies here is that if you can't do it for a decade, there's no point in doing it for a day. Like, why would you do a diet that you fucking hate? Like, what are the odds that that lasts, honestly? So that's kind of how we work with people. It's more about integration than it is like, okay, remove all the shit that you like, do all these five things, intermittent fast with keto, then we'll go carnivore and then we'll like not eat fiber at all. I just don't feel like that is aligned at all for long-term outcomes based on obviously my experience, but obviously the people that we serve. So that's really what my mission is bridging the gap between psychology and physiology to help women specifically, though we do help men too, cultivate long-term transformations and never have to diet ever fucking again.
So when you were going from like your deepest, darkest bodybuilding era of like being very restrictive, not having any flexibility at all, how did you make that transition to being more flexible? Like, what did you struggle with, and then how did you overcome it?
So my first coach told me that you are what you eat, and if you eat fat, you will be fat. And so that was, I'm not joking.
Oh my gosh.
And so that was my first stupid belief that I integrated into my approach to food. So I did not eat fat whatsoever. It probably took me 30 minutes to trim my chicken. Like, I'm not
Oh my
kidding.
gosh.
Meticulously would carve that shit so that there was no fat. I didn't eat beef. I didn't eat salmon. I didn't
Oh
eat
my
anything that had
gosh.
fat in it. It was like chicken tenderloins, chicken breast, cod, like just really, really
Ugh.
mean sources of protein. Yeah. And then it was the fruit is bad. And so, I mean, it was such an interesting paradigm shift for me because in college, I ate whatever the fuck I wanted. Chicken carbonara, boom, yes. Like we had fried chicken Wednesday. Fried chicken Wednesday, I'm there for that.
Oh, I
Like
love
cafeteria is going
fried
to be
chicken.
open. And I never struggled with my weight or my body. Like I was never raised in a dieting household. My mom never pushed that stuff. Like I'm so grateful for that. But it's also interesting that it hit me in that season of my life because I didn't realize how many food rules I had because I justified it with the external validation of being disciplined and looking amazing and like, you know, all the things that the internet and the people in that niche can really push up your inflated ego with. And so you're like, I'm hard-headed, I'm this, I'm that. Like that was kind of the narrative that was in my head, was like, you have to be that disciplined girl. You've got to show up and do these things because this is what your kind of value comes from, kind of like basketball with performance, but now it's carried over into bodybuilding and athletic and aesthetics. So after that, I realized like I had somebody mention it to me that when we hung out, that I had different behaviors in certain ways that they could see. Like, I think you still kind of have these tendencies to like restrict certain things. And they were saying it in a super loving way, like very caring. And that's when I had to take a moment and practice some awareness and be like, there's some truth to that. There is. And so I remember being like, okay, I'm going to eat something that I'm terrified to eat every day for the next 30 days. That's how I broke through this. Like, I didn't weigh myself. I didn't pull out my food scale. I wasn't anything. I was like, and again, I didn't go like all in. This is where like, I don't want this to get confused. I was still eating to satiety, stopping when I was full, continuing to be active. But at the same time, I was like, the only way for me to rewire this is to give myself evidence that there's an alternative truth, right? I can eat this and nothing bad will happen to me. So that's what I did. So every day it would be like steak, salmon, avocado, chia seeds, nuts, like, and it was typically fat more than anything. And then adding in fruit. So I'd have like protein with fruit in the morning and like that. I love fucking avocado toast now. I would have never met that love if I didn't do this. And it wasn't just that, but it was.
Such a
What are
I
you gonna
love
say?
fucking avocado toast. Just the way you said that was I love fucking avocado toast.
It's
Yeah,
true.
I do. I had it this morning. It's absolutely phenomenal.
But it wasn't until I could go through that and challenge that. And the other side effect of that was after competing, again, your hormones tank. For anybody that talks about hormones and metabolism and all this shit, like there's no such thing as starvation mode. Your metabolism adapts down. And if you're eating sh fuck all for calories, your body will adapt to that. And so as I started to build my calories up, I was drinking a pot of coffee every day, and I just normalized that. I
Jeez.
was like, this is how I function, right? I can't function without it. I was codependent on coffee. And so as I started to eat up, obviously my body and inflammation, all that started to come down, and then I didn't need coffee as often anymore. And so like these little changes that I could notice as a benefit, like the side effect of changing these behaviors, was also the thing that kept me going. Because I used to get really frustrated when my intellectual horsepower was not kicking in and I couldn't think clearly because I had such brain fog, because I couldn't, my
Yeah.
brain was running on nothing, neurons were not
Literally no
firing.
energy. Yeah.
And so, like, that's really what gave me a lot of hope. Like, yes, I gained weight. Yes, I struggled with my body image. Like, all of those things are true because people ask me those questions. Like, how did you get through it? Quality of life was more important to me than how much I weighed. And like, seeing that I showed up as a better person, I was less reactive. I was less frustrated. I was more calm. I was more compassionate with myself and other people. I wasn't as isolated. I could go out and not stress about what time do I need to get back? I need to eat. Like, I'm hangry, so I'm not paying attention to people I'm talking to because I'm thinking about food. Like, all of those things stopped. And so that's where, for me, that was way more important in continuing to open up that flexibility and see that my body composition looked better. Like, right, wrong, or indifferent. This might be controversial. You look better with a little more meat on your bones. Like, I'm just saying, as a female, like, if you're a single girly, put a little bit. I promise you, it's going to be fine. Yes. So that. So all of those things coming full circle for me was the reinforcement of that. And so that was what kept me going through that process.
You said that you had someone in your life mention something about your behaviors, and you had to realize that it was true. This for me, and you and I connect on this topic a lot in terms of not just words and communication, but also just being relentlessly honest with yourself. And some people get so defensive when someone brings something up that either they disagree with or that challenges what they're currently doing that they actually prevent themselves from growing. I'm wondering, when this person brought this up to you, did you have an initial defensive response? Like, how did you get to a point where you could objectively analyze what they were saying, objectively analyze your behavior, and be like, oh, they're right. And this is coming from a good place. I actually need to make this change.
So I think most people subconsciously kind of know when their behavior's maladaptive.
What do you
And
mean by that?
the individual, so if you're drinking every single weekend and you validate saying that that's social hour and it's really good and it's fun and you have a great time with your friends, in the back of your mind, you wake up feeling like shit and you're like, I'm never going to do that again. Like, you know that that's probably not the best decision that you can make, but you can validate you continuing to do that because you can justify it, right? And so, in the same manner, I could justify the way that I was living because I was fit and I was healthy, right? And so it wasn't necessarily problematic, but in the back of my mind, I was like, every time I'd be exposed to a certain food or a food group, I just wouldn't eat it, right? And a part of me wanted to, but because I was disciplined, I didn't. And so it's not like I hadn't had those thoughts internally. Like, my intuition was kind of like, what is so bad about that? But then my ego was like, you're disciplined. That's what's wrong with that.
Got it.
And so this individual, too, was somebody I had a great relationship with. Like, and I know that they genuinely cared about me. So when they said it, they weren't attacking me. And it took a moment for me to pause, because at first we can get defensive, right? You can be reactive. But I sat with that first, because I wasn't going to reply right away and be like, oh my God, what are you talking about? I'm fine. No, rationalization or justification, flawed ways of thinking. So knowing that, it was like, I need to sit with that, because I think they just hit on something that triggered me because it's true. And
Do you
so
think that
when I
if
could sit
they,
there,
sorry, keep going.
I was just going to say, so I don't know what I was going to say. Go ahead.
Do you think that if they had brought this up to you earlier in your bodybuilding era, like you would have been more defensive, like before you got to the point where you were having those thoughts, when this was just like you're doing this, you're disciplined, do you think like it sort of happened at the right time?
Absolutely. Yeah. Because I think when you're deep into anything, when you get lost in the sauce of something, you can't hear any objective reality that doesn't fit the narrative that you have in your head. And so at the time, it's like my mom, like, she knew I was doing some fucking crazy shit. I was up every day at 5 a.m. I'd be at the gym for 3 hours. I'd come home, get dressed, and then I worked at a gym. So I'd work out again at the gym that I was managing at the time. And then
Jeez.
I'd train people all day. And then I'd eat like two meals of chicken and fucking asparagus, right? And then come home. She'd make dinner. I wouldn't eat it because I've had to prep everything meticulously and make sure that everything was weighed perfectly. So she knew my behavior was absolutely dysfunctional. But I couldn't hear that. I was just like, you don't get it because you're not as fit as me. Like, it was my ego that's like, everybody else is telling me, I've got a coach, mom. They know what they're doing. This is what you do. And so I was not in a position to hear the reality of some of the extremes that I was pushing myself to. And again, underlying all of the other shit that I was trying to compartmentalize that had happened in my life. Like, it was just like, I need to control something because I've lost control over everything else. Let me exert control here. And so in consequence of that, I had already gone through a lot of different transitions in my life, different relationships, different challenges, and more healing. And so once I could do that, when this individual came to me and said those things, I was way more open and receptive. And I had awareness over it too, because I could feel it. Like, if you're out and you're anxious about the food that's out, it's like, why are you anxious? Or if your training program or your nutrition plan is causing you anxiety, it's like, is that healthy? So I'd already had these thoughts in the back of my mind of like, is this really what you need to be doing? Like, is this really what's best for you? And so it came right place, right time, right person. But it wouldn't have happened if I hadn't started to question what I was doing along the way. I just didn't have the courage to take action to change it.
That makes total sense. That's a quote right there. I just didn't have the courage to take action to change. Like, that's super, super important. I speak about that bodybuilding world somewhat frequently, but not too much, especially because I was never a part of it. And there's always people that get livid with me when I bring it up. But I feel like you, because you were a part of it and like very good at it, I think it's important for you to shed light on what you're saying. And so even just for example, you explaining what you're training, like training for 3 hours and training again later in the day, and just like literally taking 30 minutes to cut all the fat off your chicken. I'm not saying every bodybuilder does this. Obviously, there are bodybuilders who don't. But I think, regardless of whether or not they do that, I would say, and I'd like your thoughts, that when we look at those who their entire career and their entire everything they do is for their physique, they're going to be taking it to an extreme that the average individual is not only not willing to do, but they shouldn't be doing. I think it takes it to an unhealthy level, but it creates this completely skewed idea of not only what is achievable, but what is healthy and what should they be going after. Like, what do you think about that?
It's 1,000% true. So, and this is what I try to caution people with. So, everybody that comes into my business, and again, like a lot of my coaching business grew when I was coaching athletes in that niche. So, I was able to do it without them losing their periods or like struggling with hormonal issues. So, like that was some of the strength behind the ethical approaches that I utilize. But still, it's extreme. I'm not going to paint it like it's not. When it comes to how that can be extreme to a degree in which you've built your life around it, you lose yourself through seeking like external validation. That's the best way that I can explain that. Like, I lost a lot of the things that made me throughout that process. You become a shell of who you are to a certain extent, right? Because there are good things, I guess, that can come from that experience, but you don't have to bodybuild to have those same benefits. And so, like, even the difference between what's healthy and what's not healthy, we can talk about that in behavior. We can talk about that in exercise. Like, there's so many domains in which healthy, unhealthy to the extreme, to where it becomes toxic, right, can be implemented. But as far as like an objective visual, once you see yourself one way, you can't unsee it. And so that's where my body dysmorphia really kicked in, because I'm the same weight now that I was when I played college basketball, but the level of lean body mass that I have now is different. So I look leaner than I did then. And so I should be happy about that. But in my psychotic brain, right, I'm always going to remember myself as I was. And I'm always going to think I'm fat as a female because I don't look as lean as I once did. And that's something that you can obsess about fixing. For me, it just came to a point where I was like, I just need to accept this. I'm always going to see myself a little bit differently than everybody else does. And that's okay, because I don't want to stress about that or trying to psychoanalyze myself. It's like, I still act, and my behavior is what matters most. I still act in accordance with taking care of myself. regardless of how I might feel about my body image on any given day. I still take the actions to make sure that I'm healthy now. And I found a great balance, if you will, with exercise and food and flexibility and the things that I need to experience my life the way that ultimately I want to. Because there are so many things you will also miss being that obsessed with food, exercise, going out, like your bedtime, like all those things. And again, all of these things in fitness matter. You should get good sleep. You should manage your stress. You should eat really healthy foods. But to an extreme, the danger is always going to be in the dose there. And I posted a carousel yesterday and it said, at what level do you think a woman's health and longevity are best? And it was body fat percentages. And it was like A, B, C. And I didn't list what the body composition was. I just asked. And that got so many shares. And I got so many DMs from people that were like, thank you for posting that. I needed to hear it. And it's because objectively, if you've been in the fitness niche and you're online all the time and every influencer's got abs and a fat ass and you don't know if they're taking anabolics or not, which is a totally different conversation, but it, yes, it's very prevalent in that industry. And I just want to be honest about that.
Super prevalent.
And it will change you irreversibly, a lot of those things too. So when you objectively go out into the world and you experience people, like most women in the real world, not the internet world, are healthy. And it's, again, body composition is going to look different. Body fat on different women, depending on genetics and where they store body fat, is also going to vary. But at the same time, even just the online conversation of everybody would pick the leaner person, but the healthiest person is actually the one that has the more body fat in those pictures. And she looks great. I mean, it's just a picture of a girl on the internet. So I don't, you know, I Googled it. So I hope it wasn't somebody that saw that or felt picked on because of it. But it was just an example of what we think is healthy is not in the conversation online. And we need to, if we're really looking at helping people achieve health and fitness, then we need to stop fucking them up in the pursuit of health and fitness. And so that was the purpose of that. And I think more people would be better off looking at objective levels of what health and longevity for women is, because it's not 12% body fat.
100%. And if anyone wants to go and see that carousel or see Kate's Instagram, I'll put her Instagram in the show notes. I think the you brought up acceptance. Like, I'm just going to accept this, that I'm never necessarily going to see myself in the way that I am. It'll be slightly different. For me personally, it's just an unbelievably powerful tool, because I feel like so many people, that they operate in the realm of, but if I just could, but if I, like, if I just get here, then I'll be happy. If I just get here, then I'll be happy. And it's always this idea of a future happiness based on this future result. And I can't tell you how many times there have been, like, where even if I've achieved a very long time goal of mine, the happiness lasts maybe a couple minutes. Like, that's it. And then it's on to the next thing. And you don't realize that. And it's super cliche, and like, I hate myself for saying it, but like, it's really the journey. It's like the process of getting there, the process of achieving it, is really what the fun and the enjoyment is built out of. It's what develops your character. It's not actually achieving it. Not to mention, especially when it comes to aesthetics, I just don't think there's any single person that is going to get to a point in their aesthetics. I don't think there's one person in the world who would just be like, I look amazing here, I'm done. Like, this is it. I think there's always a critical eye. There's always a, and it's your own critical eye. There's always this, like, I'm not good enough. I'm not muscular enough. I'm not defined enough. I'm not lean enough. And whatever it is, that will always be there. And rather than trying to fix that, actually accepting it and then continuing along the journey, I think is an incredibly powerful tool.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, that was a hard thing for me to learn. Right, learning to let go, because again, I was constantly chasing accolades to validate my own worth. And self-worth is not something that you build. It's something that you discover when you let go of allowing external things to validate who you are as a person. And so doing things because they make you better, because they challenge your growth, because they give you different perspective or experiences, right? That's why you should do something, not because it's ever going to make you more valuable as an individual. It can make you more skilled or more educated, but certainly not better overall. I mean, a shit person who's wealthy is still a shit person that now has money. I mean, it just doesn't change you, right? It can amplify what you are, but it doesn't change who you are. And I think one thing that you said that I think is interesting is, like, you would achieve certain things and then feel great in the moment. And when we look at the research on dopamine, it actually peaks right before you achieve something. And this is why people will get like post-show blues in bodybuilding, since we're going off that topic, right? It's like we have this vision, we have this goal, but you put everything into the goal, and oftentimes people eliminate everything else in order to achieve that goal. So now, not have you only sacrificed certain parts of your life to commit to achieving something, you've gotten there and the dopamine hit was right before you achieved it, and then it drops. And so there's all of these different things that you need to have as far as fulfillment is concerned to be able to go through something because it makes you better, not simply because it makes you smaller. I say that all the time, but it's so true. And then knowing that your relationship with you is going to be the most important factor. And I think the sad part for me as a woman, really, is that women will talk about how men are awful to them and abusive to them or mean to them or toxic masculinity. It's like what's going on that's toxic is what you say to yourself every fucking day. Like that's more abuse than anybody's ever put upon you. And until you can recognize that and then change that, you're never going to find the happiness that you want. And so it's recognizing most people are their worst enemies throughout their entire life. And that doesn't mean that we don't all have negative thoughts. I have them all the time. The difference is I don't engage with them and I don't allow them to impact how I function. And that's where the acceptance factor comes in. It's like, I can feel that I feel this way. I can tell myself these awful things, but do I believe them? Not necessarily. And am I going to act upon them? Absolutely not.
So we spoke. I asked you a few minutes ago. I was like, if that person said something to you when you weren't ready, willing, or able to hear it, you wouldn't have made that change. Now, let's just say what you just said about some women who feel like, whether it's men or women who are being mean to them, let's say someone just heard that and they got offended by that. They got upset about that, right? And they're in a frame of mind where they're like, Kate doesn't know what she's talking about. She doesn't know me. Like, how would you try and move this person along to get to a point in which they can maybe be more objective with themselves and hear actually the voice that they're telling themselves? Almost like oftentimes people really, they love, but they don't know that they love to be a victim. And so how would you move someone along to get to a point where they can hear what you're saying, know that you're not attacking them, you're actually trying to help them understand that their own worst enemy is in their head? Like, how do you do that? What would you say?
Well, the first thing that I would say is what doesn't challenge you is not going to change you. And if you're comfortable being where you are, then it is not my job to impose my perspective onto you if you're not ready to receive it. But as somebody who's been in that position, you are going to take your power back when you stop giving it away to other things, because now you're saying, until I have this, until I achieve this, until I am this, I am not good enough. And you've built this contract between you and this goal. And if it doesn't happen overnight or within the timeline or the pressures that you put upon yourself to be able to do it, then all you're doing is dropping your self-esteem. And if your pattern of behavior or those beliefs or those narratives haven't served you to this point, then take what I'm saying and just try and tell me how your quality of life changes, because it can't get worse than it is. Worst case scenario, you stay where you are. Best case scenario, everything changes for you. But I would never come out here and attack people. I do think you need to challenge them with compassion. And again, I've said this, I say this only because I've experienced it. I'm not talking out of my asshole. Like, I didn't read a book before I came on here to come up with this story. It's because I know how broken and debilitating that is. And when you are talking shit to yourself all the time, it's going to change the way that you behave, because your thoughts drive your feelings and your feelings drive your behavior. And if you don't address your thoughts and your feelings, like, discipline is a skill. Side note, but it is. It's separating your thoughts and your feelings from how you behave. And that's how I talked about body dysmorphia and other things that I've had struggles with in my life. But until you can master that skill, you have to understand that your thoughts and your feelings will drive how you behave. And so if you don't believe you can do something, you won't ever really try. You can say you want something and then act a totally different way. And that's what we call cognitive dissonance. And so if indeed you want to be in alignment with who you could be, because at the end of the day, we could all be better than we are. I could be significantly better than I am right now. Again, you could say that's negative. I'd say that's honest, because I don't think I'm a piece of shit. I don't think I'm awful. I just think I could be better. And I think we all can. And so if you're not where you ultimately want to be, and you have that intuition that's like, I'm meant for more than this, and I know it. I just don't know how to bridge the gap between my intentions and my actions. It's all going to start with how you think and perceive yourself and what feelings you have around that, and then how you cope with those things. Like I said earlier, after losing basketball, I coped with bodybuilding to an extreme. Right, that impacted my behavior and that played out negatively for me. And if I didn't like where I was, then I needed to do something in order to change that. And that required a level of honesty, not out of self-hatred, but out of self-love, knowing that you don't have to be all these extra things, but you sure as hell aren't all that you could be. And if you want that for yourself, then you have to push yourself to do something new, no matter how terrifying that might be for you.
There's a lot of clips in this podcast, Kate. There's a lot. This is amazing. This is super helpful. What would you say to someone who is at this point, after hearing you, they're just getting ready to start their health and fitness, or maybe they're struggling with their health and fitness. Maybe they're like struggling with consistency. They're struggling, like, I want to be the person who works out. I want to be the person who eats appropriately and for my health. I want to do that, right? But they don't act, they struggle to take action on it, and they struggle to take action on it consistently. How would you approach that?
So the first thing that I would want to address with that individual is their perception, right? Because what does consistency look like to you? Is it ticking your macros and zeroing them out every single day? Is it hitting 10,000 steps perfectly every single day? Is like, at what degree are we measuring your consistency or your success or failure? And then the other thing that we have to recognize is that health and fitness is a relationship that you're building. So you can enter that relationship and be in a really toxic dynamic, which is what I would say my past was, all or nothing, extremist mentality. Or you can say, I'm going to pour into this in some seasons of my life and give it everything that I have. But if you have children or you have holidays or seasons or vacations or travel, like, do you really want to miss those moments because your hyperfixation is on being perfect? So my first question for that individual is, how are you perceiving your success with when it comes to our approach to this? Because I want to make sure you're looking at this from an objective standpoint. The second thing is, most people try to get the cart ahead of the horse. Start with something small that is achievable that you can implement today. So if you drink Coke every single day, you're drinking a liter of that, like, opt for Diet Coke, or I fucking love Diet Coke, right? Or like, do half a liter and drink more water. Now that might be like, that's stupid. Well, over a week's time, I've just saved you like what, 1200 calories in soda? That's gonna make a difference whether or not you agree with it. If you don't know how to train or you're nervous about lifting or going to a gym, like, you don't have to lift free weights if you're not comfortable there yet. You don't have to force yourself to do something that you're not comfortable with, especially if you have, again, low self-esteem or you're worried about people judging you. I will also say most people in gym are really kind, but if you're nervous about that, get on a machine. Do leg extensions, do hamstring curls, pick three exercises, and that's okay. That can be enough. That's still better than what you did yesterday, which was nothing. If you're worried about food, instead of trying to overhaul your diet and only eat chicken and broccoli and rice like a bro, you could say, okay, I really like steak and I usually get ribeye. Well, maybe I'll get a top round this time, or maybe I'll split my ribeye so I'm not eating 12 ounces, I'm only eating six, and I can, save that one for tomorrow. It's all about making small behavioral changes, because at the end of the day, you are always going to play out your habits. This is also why fad diets don't work, right? And I did a YouTube video on, I don't know, 25 studies on that all show why diets don't work. But a lot of it is because if we give you a template to follow for 12 weeks, you aren't learning anything, right? You're being super extreme. It doesn't integrate into your life. And then your habits will go back to where they were, because most people think of their weight loss journey like a destination. It's like, once I get there, then I can live my life again. Don't worry, guys. I'm just kind of doing this for now. But once I lose 10 pounds, like, we can go out again. Like, we'll be friends again. And your lifestyle and behaviors haven't changed. And so if you want long-term success, your consistency needs to be around the actions that you take, not around the outcomes that you desire. If you can focus on, did I get up? Did I get my steps? Did I exercise for 30 minutes a day? It doesn't even have to be specific. It's like, did you break a sweat? Are we moving our body? Are we being intentional about that? Are we being hydrated? Are we getting fruits and vegetables and prioritizing the things that we need while also adding in the things that we like on top of that? And if you can focus more on the principle of changing your behaviors versus the data or the win or lose or perfect days or the outcome of what the scale fucking says, because that's going to move every day no matter how you feel about it. It's just focusing on the actions. And if you can commit to the process, right, that will always dictate your progress.
Clip that. We're putting that in another clip. All right. Kate, is there anything that I didn't bring up or that I didn't say that you wanted to talk about today? And it doesn't even have to be fitness. It could be whatever you want.
No, but I think one thing your audience might like hearing from you is, we've talked a lot about me and my struggles, right? And I don't know if you've talked a ton about your personal struggles with weight loss, with wrestling, with extreme dieting. And I think while it's not bodybuilding, I do think that story is kind of important because that was one of the big eye-opening points for me is when you told me that story, I had more empathy and compassion for you as a kid who went through that than I did for myself. I think oftentimes we forget that we exist and that our feelings matter and our lives matter and we shouldn't play around with that. And so I know that I've talked specifically to women on this podcast, but I'm sure you have many men that listen to you too. And so I would love if you have a synopsis of the things that you had to go through to learn how to let go of that, because you obviously would tell me stories about some crazy shit that you used to do to be able to hit weight and compete. And so I'm curious more from a male's perspective, because I can't necessarily speak on that, what you would have to say to somebody that might listen to this and be like, okay, well, I've heard a lot about women, but like, I'm struggling too.
Yeah, I mean, well, thank you. I've made a number of podcasts on it, so I can link them in the show notes. But briefly, I grew up as a wrestler, started wrestling when I was 8 years old. I remember when I started looking at the kids in high school wrestling, because I was eight. I was like in fifth grade or something, and then got into middle school. And when my brother got to high school, he was wrestling, and my mom for the first time saw the weight cuts. And she didn't know what she had gotten us into. She got us into wrestling because we're short Jewish kids in public school. And she was like, I don't want you kids to get beat up. By the time my brother got to high school and she saw what the kids were doing to cut weight, she got super worried, and specifically about me, because you and I are very similar. And like when I do something, like I often go to the extreme. And I'll never forget, she was like, promise me that you're not gonna, it was called sucking weight. Where my brother had come home and he had told stories of these kids who were sucking weight, which is essentially they were trying to lose weight for weigh-ins the next day and they weren't eating or drinking anything. But when they got cotton mouth after a long practice, they would suck on ice chips just to try and like calm the thirst.
My God.
And my mom was like, promise me you're not going to do that. And I remember looking at her, and I was probably 10 at this time, being like, Mom, why would I do that? And when you're young and you just say something that's stupid for no reason,
Yes.
like I just don't know why I said it, but I remember saying, Mom, I love Chinese food. Why would I do that? Just like out of no, like for some reason, just like Chinese. I was like, I would never give up Chinese food. Like
Not giving up General Tso's. What are you talking about?
literally, I was like, I'm not giving up General Tso's chicken. Like I was like, I would never do that. And for some reason that made sense in my head. And then of course, a couple of years go by, make varsity as a freshman. I have to cut from 112 to 103, and I just start doing exactly that and far, far worse. Not eating for days and days at a time, skipping class, skipping entire days of school so I can run up and down the stairs with the trash bag so I can lose the weight. Like just doing the worst, worst, worst things necessary in order to make weight. And part of it was for me, and then part of it was also for the team. Right? Like it's a little bit of both. On one hand, it's like your own ego, and it's like, I want to do this to, so that I can live up to what I've expected of myself, but also you don't want to let your team down. It's an interesting dual component where it's like they're depending on me to show up, and like I don't want to let them down. Ironically, like I definitely didn't want to let the other kids down. I also didn't want to let the coaches down. And I thinking back, I just can't imagine being a coach of kids and expecting them to do the shit that they expected us to do. Like it's pretty wild thinking back to it and the stuff that they encouraged us to do. I remember one time I had stayed home from school because I was really sick and I couldn't compete. So I texted my coach. I was like, "Hey, Evan was the backup for our weight class." And I was like, "Sh Ev have Evan weigh in, like have him go, like I'm sick, I can't go to school." He was like, "Okay." Evan missed weight. So then my coach texts me back at like 7:30 in the morning, and he's like, "You need to come to school. Like Evan missed weight. He's not gonna be able to compete." So me being like a 15-year-old kid, really looking up to this coach, I was like, I got to school. My mom, she was at work, and I didn't have my driver's license. So like I ran to school, which was a couple miles away, got to school, I like checked in. So that I was marked as attended, but then I just skipped every class because since I wasn't going to go to school, I started eating and drinking, and I was like 8 pounds overweight. And so
Oh my God.
I had to lose 8 pounds from the beginning of school to weigh-ins that afternoon. And so I just put a trash bag on, sweatpants, and just ran up and down the stairs all day, the entire day. And I remember I was warming up for the wrestling match that night, and I'm super dehydrated. So I start getting a calf cramp, just like a brutal calf cramp. And I tell my coach, I was like, I'm about to have like the worst calf cramp of my life. Like I felt every time I stepped, I like about to go. Have you ever had a calf cramp where it just feels like a rod goes through your leg and you can't move
Yes.
it?
Yep.
So, and I remember I said it to the coach, and he was just like, better finish the match quickly. And like, that was it. And so
Your
I
coach was a
unfortunately,
savage.
yeah, they were, I mean, wrestling in particular is, I think I think it, it's funny. I think it depends where you go to school or where you are, as opposed to necessarily the sport. Some areas are just super, super intense with their
Was
sports,
this
and
in
some areas are,
Massachusetts?
yeah, this is Massachusetts.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So like very sports driven. Yeah, fortunately I finished the match in like 30 seconds and I won, which was great. But like, and it made a good story. But just to give insight into the terrible, terrible, very unhealthy practices that I went through in order to make, but which, and it's funny, like I was thinking about asking you this. I was going to ask if you regret going through all that stuff. I would imagine your answer is no, because it's given you so much now and you can help so many people. It's with me, like I don't regret it at all. Like if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't have this career. I wouldn't have the ability to help people that I have now. Obviously, like it sucks having gone through that, but it made me who I am today, which I'm very much appreciative for. What do you think?
I think so. A lot of people will say that they're grateful. Now, I don't regret what I went through. I don't know that I'm entirely grateful for it, though, right? Because I always tell people there are long-term consequences to short-term stupidity. And I say that because that was me. And while I've learned a lot, and there are lessons that I can take, and they make me an incredible coach, and they give me not only the education that I have, but the experience of what other women have gone through, I don't regret that, right? Those are important things. But I can't say that I'm grateful, right? Because I didn't have my period for almost a decade. I didn't think I'd ever get my period back. They told me that I was premenopausal at the age of 27. And so, like, there are a lot of things that I had to reverse that took a lot of time. I mean, I just turned 31, so I just got my period back last year. So it's 3 years of not competing, not trying to diet, not doing all that crazy stuff. And I still, like, just now have the opportunity to do that. And as a woman, of course, like, the biological clock thing, like, gets in your head about that stuff. So
Right, of
there are so many
course.
things that I can't say that I'm grateful for, but there are many lessons that I do not regret learning.
I love that. I think it's an important distinction. So I love that. Kate, where I'm going to put your stuff in the description and show notes, but where do you want people to follow you?
If you are interested in long form stuff, I would say my podcast. If you like short form, then Instagram, baby. Just hit me up there.
All right. What's the name of your podcast?
Elevate, ELEV, and the number 8.
Elevate podcast, and I'll put your Instagram as well below. Kate, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I think this is one of my favorite podcasts. This is definitely my like top five favorite podcasts I've done. I love you. I appreciate you, and I hope everyone listening goes and follows Kate and see what she has to say, because she puts out some really good work, as I'm sure you can already tell. So
I
have a
love you. Thank you
wonderful
so
day,
much. You
and I'll
too.
talk to you soon.